Blog Talk Radio.
Talk with Miss E. Gosh, it's hard to believe that the month of November has gone by already. We have one more day left in this month in which we have been very visible and very busy and very excited in celebrating National Adoption Awareness Month, one of my favorite months of the year, and it actually helps me to deal with the season change because adoption and foster care, as you all know, is just something that's very special to my heart. Not only my heart, I think it's just in my bones. And this month, we, instead of doing our show twice a month, we did a weekly series. And we started it off with a pre-air interview with my favorite adoptee next to my own sons, Mr. Les Brown. And he probably tickled your funny bones, but also touched your heart as he shared his incredible story of his single mom adopting him, his twin brother, and several other children. And then the second week, actually we had some technical difficulty as well as connection with our guests. So the last week we had adoptee, and now adult adoptee, Mr. Montoya Graham, who shared with you his journey through the foster care system until he was 8 years of age and was adopted by Mr. Fillmore and his wife, Jamila Graham. And he talked about the baggage that he came with and all of the challenges that he went through and took his family through. And nevertheless, he survived and they survived. And he's today, you know, a holder of 2 degrees in biological science and working with young people himself. And it's just an awesome testimony of what the human spirit can do if it's given the right nurturing, if it's given the whole sense of belonging and connectedness, regardless of what it looks like on the outside. Tonight, we get to speak to someone who was on the other side of that and someone that I am just excited to talk to because even the way we met was an act of God, I believe, and I'll share more with you when we begin to talk. For Ms. Carla Gallagher is the adoptive parent of a young man that she adopted at the age of 9.5 years old. He had been in the foster care system since he was 1.5. So you know already that there were some things that came along with that. And she is proud to say that she's gone through it all. Today he is 45 years old, and she still says it's worth it. And I'm not sure if those of you who may have heard Les Brown's CD series, and I believe it's the one that says Choose Your Future, and he states that it's necessary, it's hard, it's possible, it's you, and his last statement is, it's worth it. So I think it's just only appropriate that we would end this month in concluding this month's interviews with Ms. Gallagher as she shares, it's worth it. Carla, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Thank you so much for being here. And I know you have a busy, busy, busy schedule, and I just appreciate that you set this time aside to participate in this interview and this process, and probably thought she probably should go out and do this so this lady would leave her alone. Oh, gosh, I want to share with our listeners the way that I met Carla was on one of those days, you know, one of those days when you just feel like, you know, things are just kind of crazy and I just need to do something for me. And I went and sat by the Benicia waterfront, and pulling out, I looked over and saw See's Candies and decided, you know what, I'm going to treat myself. And I went in and I bought a whole 2-pound box of nuts and chews. And decided I wanted to pick up some of the other little things at the counter. But what really started our conversation was when, as I went through the little caramel suckers, et cetera, it reminded me of the day that I decided I was going to adopt my son, who was also 9 at the time. And I went into See's Candies and bought a bunch of suckers that said, "It's a boy." And I went to work and passed them out. And as I shared that story with Carla, she shared with me that she was also an adoptive parent, and my day just lit up because we had a wonderful conversation. And that was about 2 months ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I asked her, would she please share her story, and I would also say your testimony, because I know it was not an easy job. But you also can give me some more insight, because I try to build up other caregivers or adults in the village should not give up on our children. And even though mine are now 28 and 32, there's still some challenges that they face. So I figure you have 15 years on me for my oldest one and still have something to hold on to. So I'm looking for some enlightenment and encouragement myself. So tell us about your decision.
Pardon me? There was always a saying my grandfather used that I always remember. And it's life gets in the way of living, so you just got to do the best you can.
Yes. You just continued living. Just keep on living.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it that inspired you to adopt at the time that you did?
Okay, we had one child, and we were thinking of having another one, but we were into zero population growth, and the more we talked about it, the more we thought, why don't we just share what we have with somebody who doesn't have anything? So we went to the Contra Costa County, and through their adoption services, we went to all the movies of the deformed kids and the really severely disabled kids, but we stayed, and so they kept talking to us, and we had wanted a child younger than Philip so he could play the big brother. We thought that would be an easier transition. But then they brought us this 9-year-old who just we fell in love with.
Oh, just stole your heart, huh?
Yes, he did. And he came with
me. So that happened to me, too.
It's like going to the pound. This one puppy just bounces in front of you, and you go, wow. You know, it's the same when you're looking at kids, you know. There's a lot of cute ones and stuff, but all of a sudden one just hits your heart.
So did you feel like it was a hard connection at that moment when you saw his picture?
When we saw the picture, we thought that was the one we were going to try and get and see how. And they arranged a meeting, so we took him to a park, so it was a negative situation, so we could kind of see if we could blend together anyway or if it was just hopeless, you know. And but, you know, once you meet him, you know, it's hard to throw him back.
Now, you said it was a negative situation, or you meant a neutral?
A neutral.
Setting. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't want anyone to get the wrong.
No, a neutral
take
setting.
On that. Yeah. So, yeah, there wasn't one that was influenced. So you met him at a park.
Uh-huh. We took him to a park. We went to Muir Woods and ran through the woods and had lunch and hot dogs and stuff and went to the ocean and things like that and just had a nice evening. And he seemed to blend well with our family.
Mm-hmm. How old was your biological child at that time?
He's 2 years younger.
Okay, so you adopted a child
They're
older than you are.
They're about 2 years apart, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Actually, your first, what I call it the date. Your first date sounds much like mine. We can compare notes here.
Yeah.
It's enough on the notice that I sent out. I don't know if you noticed it had little hearts with little rings that could also have been wedding rings. I don't know if you noticed those. be blessed. But to me, adopting is much like marriage. You know, you become a bond, and you try to hold on and avoid the divorce and just go through the ups and downs of it because to me, it's a life commitment.
Mm-hmm. More so than a marriage.
Learn about your son during that first time. You say he seemed to fit in, but what were some of the characteristics that really influenced you?
Well, we had an active lifestyle. We went camping and did a lot of things like that. They told us when we adopted him, he'd been in a couple homes, and he was a little hyperactive, but with love, he'd be just fine. And so we took him home, and the first year was kind of like a honeymoon period before they finalized, because it wasn't really real yet.
And then you had a whole year of a honeymoon?
Yeah.
Wow, you're lucky.
They kept coming in for home visits and stuff like that, so it was never really like family, just sitting back and being yourselves, because they kept coming in and checking and everything. So he had a lot of hard times. I never saw anybody with such vacant eyes as he did when he came into our home. He just he was like a lost puppy. And he had a lot of abandonment issues and things like that. We had some trouble with stealing, and if I saw a pen I didn't buy or a shirt I didn't buy or shoes I didn't buy, I just confiscated them. Goodwill did well off of me because I had no clue as to where they came from. He'd have a story for everything. His friend loaned them and friend borrowed and stuff like this, but...
So did this start up during the first year, or was this after the adoption?
Oh, no, this was after. This is as we're going on. And let's see. It sounds terrible. You sit here and talk about all the things that happened, but he just had a lot of problems when he came. And what we just did is he tried to divide us, so we would make sure that you couldn't do anything unless both of us agreed. You couldn't come over and say, well, Mom said I could do this or Dad said I could do that. You had to have both of us agreeing. And that stopped that game real quick.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that couples really need to be able to work with, and not allowing that splitting and to be consistent and be connected. And not only couples, I would just say the village as a whole, extended family members, teachers, youth workers, very important that you're able to work together so this child finds consistency throughout
and
the complete thread.
Everybody was so wonderful, you know. I was on first name basis with the vice principal at the school, and when he tried to get me in trouble, the vice principal called one day. He says, we have to talk. So I go to his office. I said, what's Scott do now? He says, well, we have a situation. I go, what? And he says, well, he's got a bunch of bruises on his arms. And he says, you did that, hitting him with a stick. And just then, one of his teachers walked by, and she says, oh, hi, what's Scott do now? And I said, well, he's accusing me of hitting him with a stick. She says, oh, you mean those bruises on his arms? He was doing that in my class. He was hitting his arm on the end of the desk. And these were games he was playing, he'd get mad at us, he'd try to get us in trouble one way or another. He had trouble accepting good things for a long time. We'd set him up for a reward, and he'd work almost to the very end, and then he'd blow it. And it broke our hearts to see that. But it was something that he had to work through himself. So we just kept pressing on and giving him another chance and another chance and stuff.
When you found out that these behaviors were going on and you said that, you know, your heart was broken, I'm sure you were not prepared for that, because I'm sure the social workers didn't share that information with you.
No, they didn't. In fact, later down the road, down the story, he ran away when he was like 15 and a half. He got into drugs, and they were more important than home. And fortunately, there was a man in town called, what was his name, McGee, McGuire, something like that. Can't think of his last name. But he had a home for men. And he had three rules: no drinking, no drugs, and you earn your keep. And but he'd take in anybody. So he took in Scott, so we were on a first name basis. Now, where was I going? It's such a long story.
Well, we were just talking about everybody working together.
And working together with this man, because he had grown up in a much worse situation, and he knew all the tricks and all the games and stuff. And he eventually ended up throwing Scott out.
Mm.
And that was the hardest thing, is when I didn't know where he was or who, you know. But he ended up coming back when he was 22.
He was gone from 15 to 22?
To 22, had no clue where he was, prayed every night, God, please take care of him. And he came back, and there were still some problems, but he worked through them. And I like to say he did the work. We just gave him a nice, soft place to fall.
Mm. Oh,
and
I love that.
I am so proud of him now. He's just an awesome person. I just enjoy having him around.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But there were
you got me on that one.
But
you got to read my book. Our stories are so similar. It's scary.
Well, I take 2 o'clock showers so nobody see me cry.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that, you know. But I've had friends who've had birth children that had more problems than I dealt with, you know. And so you got to take what God gives you and do your best and trust him.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like even in the midst of everything that you still believe that God had given him to you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think, you know, I just completed
one of my treasures.
Mm-hmm. I just completed a workbook, and that's one of the sections that I talk about during the adoption part, is what do you have to fall back on when it seems like, you know, this is a nightmare? You know, one of my chapters is called Living My Dream, and the other is is it a nightmare? And when you're going through that nightmarish period, sometimes it's hard to look back on and say, okay, this is and was intended for me, so I won't let go. I can't let go.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, too many people do let go. I was really surprised in reading some notes from former foster youth that I never even knew had ever been in an adoptive placement, and there were so many who had disrupted adoptive placements. I was just shocked, and it just really tore my heart out, because here are people who had actually, rather than just saying, I'm going to foster you, said they were going to adopt, and they quit.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that just kept you going and going? And I'm sure, you know, your family went through some changes. Your husband and younger?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did people tell you, oh, just forget about him?
Well, we were advised when he ran away for legal purposes to rescind the adoption.
Mm.
But it was going to be so financially terrible that we just decided not to. But the best thing that came out of that is the judge ordered the state to give him a report of the history of this child, and it was nothing like the history we were given when we were adopting him.
Uh-huh.
So then we knew what he was dealing with, you know, more so than what we were told when we took him in.
Oh, so
that really it came out that was a good thing, even though we canceled the recension and just let it go because it was going to be financially impossible for us.
Well, there was a point when you did attempt to do that.
We were advised for financial and things because we were getting bills for places he had been where something was broken or stolen or something, and they'd send us the bill. But trying to track him down, he was gone already.
Mm-hmm.
During that
mm-hmm.
time, he was gone. So we were advised to protect ourselves. Because, you know, if you burn down a building, there goes our home and anything we might have. So we were told to protect ourselves by doing that, but we decided against it while we were in the midst of the process.
Wow.
But the best thing that came out of that was the report the state gave him, because that was nothing like what was represented to us when we took him in. And that was an eye-opener and a shock.
Did you feel deceived by the social workers about an adoption agency?
We felt like the agency had really let us down. If we had known going in what we found out then, we may not have taken them, you know. So things happen as they're meant to happen, and things unfold as they're meant to unfold. So that at that point, that gave us much more understanding about where he was and where he came from and why some of the behavior was the way it was.
Right. So it actually
softened. So that when he did
heart.
Come back, we had a stronger footing to stand on.
Okay.
We weren't dealing with this black hole that just kept sucking things up.
And we didn't
know why or where or how.
Exactly. Did anyone ever point the finger, before you got that information, did anyone ever point the finger at you and your husband about your parenting or your contribution to his acting out behaviors?
No, we always took him to get help. He spent thousands of dollars on counseling and special training. He was 9 1/2, and he could barely read at a second grade level when he came, so we took him to a clinic in Lafayette that did special reading training and brought him back up to his grade level and stuff like that. So we always went out and sought the help that we needed as things arose. And we had counselors when his behavior got really weird and things like that that we talked to. We had a neurologist who was checking his medications that they had sent him with and decided to change them because he felt they were way too strong for a child his age and stuff like that.
Big one.
Yeah.
Real big one. And people think just because, you know, they can't deal with the behaviors, if they don't understand it, that they'll drop the kids up and make them, you know, something that you can work with, you can control them. But it still does not help with all of the things that are going on inside their hearts and minds. We have no idea what these babies have gone through. So when you got that information from the judge, I'm sure your mouth was hanging open. So it sounds like that even opened your heart even more so.
You just went, oh, my gosh. And he'd been bounced from foster home to foster home to foster home to foster home. They told us one or two. But, no, he'd been through so many. And the only one we had contact with was the last one. And he was there for 2 years, and they were building a boat. And he was there every weekend helping them build this boat. And then when the boat was ready to sail, it was bye, Scott. And, And then they dumped him on our doorstep. So, you know, the poor kid was just, you know, beaten to pieces when he came.
You know, I think one of the things that I stated when I started the organization For a Child's Heart is that when we recruit for adopt, because I used to be a social worker as well, but when we recruit families for children, a lot of times I feel like it was a setup to both the kids and the families. And my goal was to be able to provide some type of support once you already said yes, because there was little support afterwards. You know, I look at who's available, and really the only thing that people would say from the adoption agency was, well, do you want to end the adoption? It's like, no, I want some help. You know, that's like saying you want to push your baby back up in your womb. Like, no, help me,
yeah.
him.
But we went out and found it as we went along, and one thing that I always laugh about is we decided to put him in Pop Warner football and let his own peers knock him down a peg or two. He ended up on a championship team. What are you going to do?
Yes. That's called channeling his energy. Developing his gift, stirring up his gift.
But he loved it. He loved it.
Oh,
so that
wow.
was really a good thing for him.
Amazing.
But
amazing.
I laugh, you know.
Like, okay, this is going to be your, what do you call it, your virtual defense. But all things work together.
Yes,
so
they do.
So you say he came back at about 22. And how long would you say it took before he really started to stabilize and get on the right?
Well, he was having some troubles. He had some trouble with alcohol. And he was in a horrible, we had a 4 o'clock phone call from the CHP that there had been a fatality accident and the survivor was being taken to the emergency room.
And you said 4 o'clock a.m.?
4 o'clock a.m. And I think that was the longest car ride I've ever had in my life. And he was the survivor. And the CHP guy told me that because he was a bodybuilder, his muscles held him together when his bones wouldn't. He had crushed ribs, a punctured lung, and his back was broken in two places. And that was a long healing process. Kaiser said he was beyond their ability. They sent him over to St. Mary's. And he ended up with the doctor who ended up working on Montana. Talk about luck.
Wow.
And at that time, he had the longest rods in history put in a human back.
Whoa. And he was how old at this point?
About 24, 25.
Okay.
And the kid that was driving was killed, and he was a very good friend, too. He bounced through my house for years and years. He was like a puppy, and that was hard on me, too. We had the hospital bed in the family room, and one day he says, Mom, would you call AA for me? I said, no, I'll look up the number, but you have to make that call. And he did, and this little old guy would come over, and I'd go garden or something, and they'd talk for hours and hours and hours.
Wow.
And between going through that experience, I started to see this new person emerging.
And, you know, we often hear the old phrase that it gets better, it gets worse before it gets better. And I think people give up so quickly because it's like we don't feel like we can bear to go through anything any worse than we've already been through. And through that, you know, is where our miracle actually takes place.
Well, when you look back on it, it sounds terrible. But when you're in the midst of it, you're so busy coping. You don't have time to go, gee, this is a horrible experience.
Right. It's like after you get through it, it's like, you know, you hold it together. I saw this little statement on a car, had a baby leaning on the stairs. It says anybody can get through a crisis. It's this day-to-day living that gets you down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you're going through a crisis, you're on survival mode and you're doing whatever is necessary. And it's like when you have a traumatic situation, you hold it together. And when it's over, that's when you just break down and you cry and your body starts to go through changes because you are in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And
so
you say
after he'd healed. Huh?
Go ahead. I was gonna make a comment. You said that it sounds horrible. However, these are the stories that people often hear, but they don't hear the inside because that's just the external part of what's going on. That's not the meat, you know, that's just the skin. And we want people to look beyond the skin. That's why I focus everything on heart. If people saw you as an adoptive parent, him as an adoptee, and just saw he was acting out and that you had done, you know, all these great things for him, and he didn't appreciate it, that would be the end of it. But they didn't look to see what was going on in his heart and his mind and how he had been impacted and how you were also impacted, but how you made a decision to continue, as you say, to be something, give him a soft place to fall upon. And that's just so awesome. And that's why I tell caregivers, take care of you so you can be whole when they do make that decision to turn around and you for them.
I've always been a firm believer the best thing you can give your child is a well-balanced parent.
I like that. The best thing you can give your child is a well-balanced parent. I'm going to use that. I will. That is awesome. As he looks back, did he know you were doing this interview this evening?
I sent him an email. He lives in Utah.
Okay.
I sent him an email and sent him a copy of the email with my picture on it when you sent it to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he's listening or not. But,
okay. I was just wondering, what is his take on, you know, his perspective and when he looks back at those years?
Well,
what
I can share
say?
One experience with you. Okay. I had the old papers from the court, and they listed his mother's name and address, the names of his siblings, the names of his grandparents, and so on and so forth. And he was here one day for Christmas, and I said, "Here, Scott, you need these. This is your family information in case you ever need it." He handed it back to me. He says, "Mom, I'm a Gallagher now."
Oh. See, as an adopted parent, I know what that means.
I know. Yes. I know. I get teary when I think about it, too, because that was a very, very special moment.
Wow. So you didn't expect that, I'm sure.
No, I thought he'd take him because, you know, he'd had a lot of health problems, and I thought maybe he could check for genetic things that might run in the family or something, but he just he didn't want them.
Wow. But you held on to them just in case there's some information he would need your time.
Yeah.
So was there any other comment about that I'm a Gallagher now? What was your response?
He's grown into the person he's become, and he's a very special person. He's got an outgoing energy that just, you know, he lights the room up when he walks in.
Oh,
and, you know, even sober, he's the life of the party. He's just that kind of a person, and he's just a joy to have around. And he takes in people who are having troubles and helps them a little bit and stuff and gives them some of his expertise from his experiences. He's awesome with kids. He's just awesome with kids. They just love him. They just eat him up.
Oh, awesome.
And I'm just so proud of him. He just really fills my heart.
And that's what I want people to be able to know, that it can happen, and that that child has been placed in your life for a reason. You know, I hear people say, "I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it." And that child has been placed in your life, and you really truly believe that there's nothing you can do but love them and seek God for the wisdom and the knowledge. Because a lot of times it's like walking with a blindfold, and a heart monitor on, because sometimes you don't know if your heart is going to beat again or not. And that's, again, we go right back to it being heart work.
Yeah.
So you,
well, at his wedding, I'm not really a singer, but I sang "I Bless the Day I Found You."
Ooh.
And I meant that to he and his wife on so many different levels, but I did that at their reception, whether they liked it or not.
How
that was
beautiful.
My little gift. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So how long has he been married?
Oh, gosh, don't ask me. I'm terrible with time.
Okay.
But it's been a while, and he's got a beautiful wife that I just love to pieces, and they just are such a joy to see when the two of them come.
That's beautiful. Do they have children?
No, they don't.
Okay.
But you never know what tomorrow brings.
I know. So I've heard some young people who have grown up that say, "I'm afraid to have children because they say payback is the mother." And they're afraid that they're going to have a child like them. But it's interesting how that turns out. And I just believe that everyone's life, you know, a test is a testimony, a mess becomes a message. And you have a message. He has a message, and I'm sure everyone is involved.
Yeah.
As a result, he's able to go back and to help other people.
Oh, yeah,
so
he's always reaching out to other people. He's always pulling other people in. He's just amazing.
Wow, I would love to meet him one day when he comes down. But you talked about those days when you would take a shower in the middle of the day just to let the tears roll without anyone seeing. Tell me a little bit about those days.
He just had so many problems. There was like one day I was walking down the hall, and he just kind of, as he was walking, he kicked his brother who was digging a towel out of the linen closet. And I just casually said, "Don't do that." And he escalated the thing until the point where he had tears streaming down his face and he was sobbing, "Why don't you believe me?" But that was the wounded spirit. You know, that wasn't the person he became. And I always say he did the work. He did the work. He did the hard stuff. We just found help when we felt we needed it. And as one of the counselors that we went to see, what we did is he couldn't handle everything at once, so you gave him boundaries, and he could bounce around inside those boundaries. And then once he could handle those boundaries, you could make them a little bigger. And then if he could handle it, it was fine. If he couldn't, then you shrink him back down again and give him a place where he's got a comfort zone in which to function. And that's basically what we tried to do. Worked a lot. Sometimes it didn't. And then when the drugs came when he was a teenager, that was just a real bad time. Anybody who deals with drugs will tell you that's a terrible time. Drugs come in the door, personality goes out the window.
How was he? How did he do academically during his, I guess, middle school years before he ran away? Because I know when you said he came, he had difficulty with reading. He was behind academically.
Oh, he was frustrating. He's brilliant. And when he would get in trouble because he brought home a cinch notice and we'd ground him and say, "You can't do this and that to bring your grades," he'd bring home 100% papers time after time after time until he reached the minimum and then he'd stop. So I knew the kid was brilliant, but he was just bored. He probably, if he'd been caught earlier, he might have been put in a gate program and had his energies channeled into something. But because he had been slipped around so much, he had developed so many walls that nobody realized how brilliant this kid was.
And, you know, I constantly tell people when a child is acting out like that and if they have, you know, some challenges academically, I still believe those are little geniuses. I always say that. I look at those kids, and even when you look at some of the coping mechanisms they've come up with and some of the lies they tell, you look and you say, "This kid is brilliant. He's a little genius. How can we make work for him?" And I think that's a part of it, by reminding them how smart, how brilliant they are, rather than telling them, you know, how crazy and how off the wall they are. I think once you can get that inside of them, that they really have something to offer and that somebody can see it, it takes down a little bit more of that wall just to hear that you've really got something going for them. What were some of the moments? Because I always tell people there's pain, but there's also joy. Because I know if it was all hell, you would not have continued to stay in there. What were some of the joyful times that you had with him?
We had him in Boy Scouts, and he just blossomed in Boy Scouts. The troop we had him in over in Concord was wonderful. And just watching him go through the different steps and earning the different things. And they found out I worked in a hospital, so they had me working on the first aid merit badges. So we had kids with bandages and gauze all over them. They looked like a bunch of mummies, a tribe of mummies. He always had friends because before he had family, that's all he had was friends. So even now his friends are really, really, really important to him.
Wow.
And if you make a friend with him, you've got a friend for life unless you cross him. He's just awesome.
And there's that sense of loyalty. And a lot of adults do not understand how and why, especially teenagers, bond with one another. And they will always say, you know, well, he chooses the wrong crowd. And I think it's just that they find the crowd of people who can relate to what's going on inside of them, and they just happen to express it in a socially inappropriate or unacceptable manner. And but there's a connection, and there's loyalty. There's mm-hmm. true loyalty there.
Oh, yeah, he and his friends. And I used to get so mad when he had girlfriends because I'd say, Scotty, you've got to clean up your room or you're not doing anything. Next thing I know, there'd be four girls knocking on the front door. They'd come clean his bedroom, and he sat on the phone.
Now, see, that sounds like my younger one. Can bribe anybody with that little charm.
And whenever he broke up with a girlfriend, they stayed friends. They, he even now, when he comes to visit, he goes down and visits the family of his first wife. And it's been
wow.
years.
Wow.
If people are a strong part of his life, he hangs on to them, and he just won't let them go.
Wow. That is really something. That is really something.
Mm-hmm.
Did he go back and make any reconnections with any of the prior foster families or people
no.
who he knew in school,
et cetera? He doesn't want to go back. He doesn't
okay.
want to go back. He's closed that off in his life, period. He's made, you know, I've offered to give him information, and he, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So he knows who his family is. You know, you talked about when he says, I'm a Gallagher, and it's interesting because my oldest was gone for like 2 years without any knowledge of where he was, and actually most recent was, you know, the past 4 years. But it was interesting because I called one day on someone else's phone. There was someone that called him who knew how to get in touch with him, and I got on the phone, and I was just talking to him. I said, do you know who you're talking to? He said, yeah, I know who I'm talking to. This is my mom. And it just made me feel good because it was like, that. There's no question or doubt about that. The relationship isn't
mm-hmm.
questionable. You know, and that,
yeah.
I believe, if nothing else happens, is that
mm-hmm.
for a child to know that they have a family, regardless of how they deal with them, to know that they have a family, they're not alone in the world, that's a win right there.
Mm-hmm.
A win right there.
Oh, yeah. And the Gallagher family was awesome in itself in accepting him in and making him a part. He's got cousins he talks to, goes and visits because they live closer to him than I do. All the time, you know, and he's just a joy to have around. He really is. I'm so pleased with the way he turned out.
And those are the stories we need to hear more of, you know, and we don't hear it from both perspectives, and that is what I try to do here, you know, as a platform for both the radio and the television
mm-hmm.
program to the community to be able to say, don't give up on our children.
Well, day one, he was our son. Like I say, I've had friends who've had worse problems than I have had.
Mm.
And their sons were their birth children. So you never know what God's going to give you, but you've got to trust what God did give you and work with it and keep the faith and keep trying and keep praying and keep crying and eventually, the sun shines through. And if you love the person and not the symptoms, and that's one thing I kept saying, I love you, Scott, but I don't like what you're doing.
Exactly.
And I always tried to give him honesty. If I was honestly angry, I would give him
mm-hmm.
honest anger. If I was honestly loving, I was giving him honest love. I wasn't giving him phony hugs and going, oh, woo, 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 woo,
mm-hmm.
like you see some mm-hmm. people do. And I gave him honesty. So he knew when he did come back that he knew that when we dealt when he had to deal with us, it was straight. It wasn't anything he had to pretend or anything because we knew him for who he was.
I like that. And one of the things that you stated when we were talking about doing this interview was that you felt that being the honest and consistent was very important. And you talked about, you know, the honest anger, the honest love, and just being real. And that's what it really boils down to because kids know when you're phony.
Oh,
they
yeah.
pick that
mm-hmm.
up, you know, like a, what's the
mm-hmm.
dog that I sent out to hunt. I only do lap dogs. So. But, you know, they know it. They sense it deep down within, and they will watch for a while. And that's why I think first initially they test so much, because they've had so many people in their lives who have been insincere. And when you're angry, and I believe that anger is a secondary emotion, there's usually always something else underneath. And I think a lot of people, when we talk about unconditional love, they're talking about not expressing your anger. No, that's real. And the major thing we want them to know is that this is called relationship. We want to teach them how to have real, healthy, strong relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And relationships have consequences.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. So it sounds like you have a strong spiritual base as well.
Yeah, I always have had.
Okay.
Most of my life. Mm-hmm.
So that has probably been the main foundation. Besides, you know,
well,
the
that's
thing.
My foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That's my foundation, but
that's your foundation, and that's what kept them alive.
Mm-hmm.
As a friend of mine used to say, especially to the child, said, "You better be glad I know God. You better be glad I'm safe."
Mm-hmm.
So, because he could have put him somewhere else besides on that football field, he could have been the football.
Well, there is one story. We had a thing when my husband would come home. He'd say, "Well, what did Scott do today?" And I'd go, "Well, he did this and this and this." And by the time I hit 2, 3, or 4, my husband's down the hallway. You know, he hasn't heard about the next 20. And so one night, we had a thing with Scotty in the radio. No matter who was going down the hallway, you went in and turned down the radio because he always had it blaring. And so one night my husband went down, turned down the radio, and he came back with this sheepish look on his face. I said, "So what? I heard some crashing." He says, "It was the radio or the kid."
And that's real. It is like that sometimes. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. And not so much that, you know, I love just the act of violence, but it's like we have to make choices. And sometimes we don't have an outlet close enough to discharge all of that energy, and it's better that, considering that, than the actual child. that's, you know, in the humor.
But it was so funny.
Being able to find
turn the radio down all the time, and I even took fingernail polish, and pink was where you could have it during the daytime, and red was where you had to have it at night.
Hmm.
And
okay.
On the volume thing, I put little lines.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd always go down, and one time I went in to turn the radio down, and the kid had headphones on, and it was still blaring.
Goodness.
I can hear it all now.
Oh, my gosh. Now, how did all of these behaviors affect your younger child?
Philip is an unusual child. He's a very spiritual child.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the intellectual one, and Scott was the physical one. And they had sword fights with my vacuum cleaner bars or whatever you want to call them, hose things and stuff. But now they are really buddies. Now that they're adults, they are really buddies, and they really care about each other. It's really cool.
So what was the younger one's response, Philip's response, when Scott was doing all these things?
There were times he got really upset, and just like brothers do. I mean, you know, it was like sibling rivalry from day one. One of the counselors says it's really funny when you have a child that has problems, then the other child becomes super good.
Mm.
And I think that's the role that Philip took on, is always trying to be the good kid.
And, you know, I think as a therapist, I've seen, and as a mom, I've seen a couple of things to happen. A lot of times the kid who's acting good sort of drifts back in the background, and there's so much energy is being placed into the child who's acting out their pain, the younger one starts to feel ignored, and sometimes they will decide to do something outlandish that's totally out of character to be able to compete for that attention. And I was wondering if any of that happened.
Well, Philip's a musician, and their brain works differently.
Okay.
He's been a musician since he was little. Whenever we would have a group of kids here going, well, let's go do something. And he'd go, well, what do you want to do?
Well, I don't know.
Well, I'm going to go practice. When you decide what you want to do, come back. So they'd be gone for an hour or two, and they come back. Well, let's go do something. And he had his music, and I'd go to sleep listening to his music. I mean, he just, that was his spiritual inner being, is he's a musician. So his energy went into his music.
Okay. And that's something that's very important, too, for children to have a place where they find that sense of solitude, that place of being grounded and connected.
Mm-hmm.
So he had that. He had that.
Yeah, I just think they're born artists and born musicians, and if you can recognize it early and nurture it, they take it from there. And he did. And it's still, you know, his life.
Well,
he has a day job, but music is his life.
I love it. You know, when we started HART during November for National Adoption Month, we used to have an event the weekend before Thanksgiving called Giving Thanks for the Children. And what we did was to just highlight the gifts and talents of children from wherever they were. But the whole emphasis in summarization was that every child has some gift, but none of these children had been would have been able to exhibit their gifts and manifest them as they had without the caring and the support of family.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our emphasis on that. We've not done that in a while, but I think that is so, so very important. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I think the community as a whole has little awareness of what is going on with our children who have been through the foster care system. And I think, in trying to evoke a sense of pride in our children to let them know that their circumstances are not who they are and that there's no shame, should be no shame for them because of some circumstances with their parents, their biological parents. But the community has such a stereotype. And I remember speaking to someone that I asked for the children to come and perform, and the lady said, oh, so we'll get to see the kids? And I said, what do you mean, see the kids? You know, it was almost like they were going to go to, you know, a zoo or something to see some animals.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying, well, I just came out there with
struck on something that struck a memory in my head. Scott has a saying that one of his counselors gave him, and I've heard him use it when he's counseling other people. And it's no matter who you are, no matter who your father is, no matter who your mother is, it's the person that you decide to be that makes the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard him tell so many people that.
Mm.
And that's something he holds close to his heart.
I love that. And that's it for people to feel like they have the power to make a choice.
Yes.
Yes, and I think
doesn't
so many
of doesn't
matter
where you live, doesn't matter what car you drive, it's who you choose to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think our society as a whole, there's so many people who don't realize they do have the power to make choices over many situations, and the ones that we can't, you know, it goes right back to the serenity prayer, you know, the courage to do and the wisdom to know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But it's all an inward decision, perception, and choice.
Mm-hmm.
That is so awesome.
Well, the Cherokees say, you have the choice of what life you live. it's what you give is what you're going to get back. So you choose your life.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, I just thank you. I commend you for just having the heart, to not give up. Another question I was going to ask, were there any support groups available when you were parenting?
No. We either paid for counseling, training, or we had friends and family support, and that's all we had.
Wow. That's amazing.
There were no groups. There were no associations available that we knew of at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were basically doing what they now call tough love long before I ever heard the term.
Wow, so you were really out there. Yeah, because that was some time back. And today, for some people, I think there are more services out there, but for some, even just gaining access to some of them are difficult for some people. And that is the goal of For a Child's Heart, is to be able to have an easily accessible space and services and support systems for the kids,
mm-hmm.
as well as caregivers, to hold them in one piece. And I know with now with the economy and with the insurance issues, a lot of things are not covered. And as a result, that's why we ask for donations, because I'm not going to turn a family away just because their insurance will not pay and you've got to do this and that. It's like that's the last thing that someone in crisis, or not only in crisis, just in chronic stress, wants to have help with. You know,
yeah.
And my heart goes out to them. So I thank you. I would probably will call on you at some point to ask you to speak to some of our potential adoptive parents, the people who've heard the scary stories, because I feel that people get one extreme or the other. They get the
mm-hmm.
nice, rosy, huggy, kissy, sweet pie in the sky, and they lived happily ever after stories, or they get the, you know, war fatalities, and they never get the in-between. And like you said, there's, you know, not only do we need a balanced parent, we need to have a balanced perspective and, you know, perception and view of what really goes on as a reminder, and not only to the for the caregivers, for the kids. Because I think when the kids are in the midst of that, I believe that they're also afraid because they don't know where things are going to go. All they know is that they're out of control. They don't want
mm-hmm.
someone controlling them, but they're also afraid. So I think
much of their acting out is fear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this poor kid, he'd been bounced around so much, he didn't know what family was. Mom and Dad were words you used to get stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now he's just really a pleasure and a joy to have around.
That is so beautiful.
And I'm so thankful.
Well, tell him I said hello, a big hug for me, and I look forward to meeting and speaking to him one day. And
okay.
I hope if he actually hears this interview that he will feel proud of the work that he's done and the work that you've done together. You know, people want to say, oh, well, you did a good job. You did a good job at maintaining and holding that space for him, and he did the work. So that's what family does. Family works together.
Yeah.
And it's not one person act. And if we can get the village to recognize that and not lay blame, not accuse, not come up with all this negative forecast and prophecy of what's going to happen. I heard people, oh, that kid is going to be dead before he's 20 years old. Those kinds of things. We don't need to hear that. We
mm-hmm.
don't need to hear that at all.
No.
And they don't need to hear it. So I'm going to, let me see, are you open to any questions?
Sure.
Actually, I've been away from the board, so I need to see if anyone is in the chat room. Now, when someone is in the chat room is just a guest, they can't actually log in, so they can't type. So we have no one that can actually speak on there. Let me see who's on the line. If I can find that board. Ah, okay. I see a number that I recognize. And is another Miss Evelyn. Are you there? Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Welcome back. I see you joined us again this week. Ah. Was that you, Carla?
Yeah, that was me. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I thought that was our guest. Well, I guess she's going to be silent tonight, so I'm going to press her back in. You're getting the unblock, and now it's going in circles. Okay, that's it. So we're going to close the second. Is there anything you would like to say in closing?
Hold your head up, walk a straight line, and love will find the way. If you really love the kid, love them. Love them.
Love, love, love. I love that. Love will find a way. That's an old song. Lionel Richie.
Oh, okay.
Love will find a way. Well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being my guest tonight, and we're going to see that you are treated with love and respect and with heart, that you're going to be blessed for your contributing to this, not only just the celebration of this month, but in life in general. So thank you again.
Thank you.
God bless. All right.
God
bye-bye.
Bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Her heart is breaking.